And welcome into the Big Three. I am Danny Burke alongside Jonathan Von Tobel here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Like we said, it's the Big Three. We go over the three biggest sports betting news stories of the day. So let's begin on the hardwood with the Pacers and Malcolm Brogdon, who says that he's ready to play in Orlando. We know everything that's been going on with the Pacers already. Victor Oladipo is not going to be playing in the return to play at the end of July in Orlando. But Malcolm Brogdon on the other side looks like he is good to go, JVT. And this is great news if you're a Pacers fan or just a backer in any sense, because it seemed like a lot of things were going the opposite way with the Pacers. There's been reports where it was just, okay, let's just make it out of here in one piece rather than trying to advance far in the playoffs. How much do you buy into that with maybe not even the Pacers, but the league in entirety?
But just going in and getting out kind of deal?
Yeah.
I think if they're there, they're there for a reason. You know what I mean? I think certain probably individual players maybe have that mindset, but I think as a whole, a lot of these teams want to get in and win a championship. I will say, right, you know, you mentioned Victor Oladipo, the fact that he's not going to play Malcolm Brogdon. I find it really fascinating that this Pacers team, you know, they're taking on Philly, and we have these lines up. Since Oladipo has been ruled out or ruled himself out, that line has moved up a point, so Philly's now up to a five-point favorite. And what I'm interested in that is this is a player in Victor Oladipo who last year was very impactful, very good player. This year was still working his way back from injury and still wasn't the same guy right before the break. He had three games where he had averaged over 18 points, and those are the last three games right before the hiatus. And then after that, you know, before that, he didn't really do much. And so is it now when you're looking at a game line where it's Philly minus five, is it an overreaction to adjust this by a point? Right? Is the market overreacting for a loss of Victor Oladipo, even though he hadn't been a massive contributor because he'd been out all season? And so things like that I'm really curious about. Like, when we start to get more guys who are going to be ruled out or decide not to play, right? Or like the Phoenix line, for example. How high is that going to get now that Bradley Beal isn't going to play against Washington? So these are the types of things I'm really excited for. But I do think that Philadelphia, if that keeps moving in that direction where we're getting to 5.5, 6, I really would be interested actually in Indiana, considering that they played a majority of the season without Victor Oladipo.
All right, well, let's move on to the NFL. Where Pro Football Talk reports that the NFL and NFLPA have reached an agreement on 2020 travel protocols. This, of course, goes hand in hand that there will be a preseason, though, that is apparently still being negotiated, went from 4-2, maybe now 2-0 at this point. It had been proposed that visiting teams travel and return the same day, but it appears that that has been scrapped as to this point. Every member of the traveling team will be required to wear a mask. Buffets have been outlawed. May seem minor, but it will definitely make it more difficult to feed a group of, you know, big guys, literal linemen who are going to be need to be fed before and after the game. They managed to pull it off in 2020. This season, naturally, JVT will be unlike any other. And, man, let's hope they can pull it off.
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, look, a very positive, and the NFL has clearly been like the bulldozer that is just churning forward, and they're like, you know what, look, we'll make little adjustments, we'll cut the preseason to two games, we'll do small things here and there, but we are going to continue to do what we want to do. And we have yet to really get an idea of what's going to happen with stadiums. Are they going to allow people in? Will it be half capacity? Will it be a quarter capacity? Whatever it is. But regardless, like, I am hopeful and very positive that this is going to happen, because the NFL has shown that they don't care is not the right term, but for lack of a better term, we'll use it. But you're right. Like, when you're talking about cities who have warranted you need 14 days of isolation before you can come in, right? Things like that. How do you get past that if you're in the National Football League? And I'm fascinated to see it. But it's the NFL, and a lot of people will bow to the NFL, considering it is the king, and it's a moneymaker for a lot of cities.
All right, going back to the NBA, man, it just does not get better for the Brooklyn Nets. Taurean Prince has also tested positive for the coronavirus and will sit out the Orlando restart. He is now the seventh Net that will not participate in Orlando, joining Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, DeAndre Jordan, Spencer Dinwiddie, Wilson Chandler, and Nick Claxton. The Nets naturally expected to sign a few more substitution players for Orlando, but for now it's fair to expect to see a lot of the other bench players they got going, JVT, and man, poor Brooklyn. Talk about a team that just wants to get out of there in one piece.
Yeah, I wanted to see. I mean, I'll look this up, too. I should have had this ready for you before we started. But the one thing I'm really interested in is terms of the Eastern Conference. So, like, right now, as of this morning, the Washington Wizards are still, and again, look, Bradley Beal's not playing, but they're still 21-1 over at DraftKings, right, to win the eighth seed. I just think with the Brooklyn Nets, like, as banged up as they are, this eighth seed is going to be really, now it's fascinating in the Eastern Conference. Nobody cared prior. Now it's really interesting.
All right, well, they're going to continue the talk with NBA and much more here on The Edge. That wraps it up for myself, Danny Burke. Coming up next, The Edge with JBT here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
What's up? Welcome in. You heard it. The Edge. I am back after that nightmare yesterday. I have no idea. I didn't watch. All right. We have a great show on tap today. Matt Youmans is going to be with us later. We'll talk a little golf as, of course, we have a good tournament coming up this weekend, an interesting tournament as well as we look ahead to next week, too. But we'll get to the details on that. So we'll have horses for courses before we get to Youmans. Nothing but analytics today. Actually focuses on a team we just got done talking about. That would be the Indiana Pacers today. Pacers are a really fascinating team, man, for multiple reasons. The fact that, you know, least of which is, of course, Victor Oladipo not playing, but we'll get to the team from a statistical standpoint, what we can expect, because there are some numbers and the statistical profile for the Indiana Pacers, fascinating to say the least, especially when you look at them from an offensive standpoint and one of their glaring weaknesses. But we'll have that for you in just a few minutes. Before we get to that, by the way, we are expecting, maybe, don't want to jinx it, but Rodney Marsh, hopefully, will be with us, host of Grumpy Pundits on SiriusXM, former English footballer as well. Last time, none of his fault, by the way. Sometimes technology will get you. But let's start with soccer because English Premier League has a pretty full slate today, four games, three of which have just kicked off, one of which actually carries some really significant weight in terms of some bigger picture stuff. We're talking, of course, about Sheffield United taking on Wolverhampton. Sheffield at home. Three-way line for this bad boy. Wolverhampton, Wolves at plus 115. Sheffield United plus 285. The draw at 2-1. Goal line, Wolves at minus a half, plus 115. And the total of two shaded to the under. This is a Wolves team that we saw them last time, right? Took a 2-0 loss to Arsenal on the chin. But had been playing very, very good football prior to that, claiming all 9 points in three matches prior, turning in a clean sheet in each victory, and just two losses in their last 12 league contests, going a total of 6-4-2, stretching back to before the hiatus. Now 3 points out of fifth against, of course, Man U sitting in fifth right now. But a big game for the Wolves, obviously, as they continue to push for a potential Champions League spot. So this one is really, really big, for actually for both teams, too, because, of course, as we know, Sheffield United still can not only qualify for Europe, but, of course, has an outside path to finishing within the top five, or top, not top four, but top five. We'll get to this with Rodney, because, of course, coming up on Monday, we will get the ruling potentially on Man City's appeal and whether or not they will be allowed in the Champions League, because, of course, if they're denied, then that changes everything in terms of how you finish in the English Premier League. But if you look at this just from a couple of trends perspective, Wolves have been fantastic on the road overall this season, but in their last five, 4-1-0, taking 27 of a possible 48 points overall whenever they're away from home. That's 7-6-3. Sheffield has turned things around as of late, but if you look at the recent form overall, it hasn't been really great. They came back from the hiatus in a little bit of a slump, 0-1-2, those two losses by both 3-0 scores. But they do come back off of a win and a draw coming into today. So we'll see, of course, if they can continue to turn things around. A couple of bodies that we should note, Pedro Neto for the Wolves. He is doubtful to show up, took a strong kick in the loss to Arsenal, and we'll see what the effect is there. And three other games, of course, later today, one of which will kick off at noon. But let's head out to the phone line. Rodney Marsh, again, host of Grumpy Pundits, nice enough to give us a couple of minutes. You can hear him on SiriusXM. And, of course, former English footballer coach as well. Rodney, I appreciate some time. I kind of wanted to start with, like, a general overview of stuff because here on the show and, like, personally, I've watched soccer, but I'm getting into the handicapping aspect of soccer and evaluating, you know, football clubs. And so I wanted to start with you with this. Like, you know, when you're evaluating teams – in sports out here in America, I'm used to doing it, right, with hockey, when it comes to football, when it comes to basketball. But when it comes to the sport of soccer, when you're evaluating clubs, which position group, in your opinion, is one that holds the most weight, is the most valuable among the ones on the pitch?
Well, it's a great question because there's a massive difference between soccer and any other sport in terms of gambling, and I'll tell you why. So frequently, a team that's, as an example, Liverpool won the championship and they had like seven games to go. Because they've won the championship, they start to play their younger players and the bench players. So it kind of makes the odds, handicapping the game a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's almost like with every sport, right? Because if a game means something to a certain team, like Orlando, I think, for example, in the NBA, right, we have these clubs that are actually extremely good, like a Milwaukee Buck, who is at the top of the league. And yet, I think when we talk about eight seeding games, they're not going to really care because they're locked into where they're going to be by the time the postseason tournament starts. So let me ask you this. When we're looking at teams overall, right, because in certain sports, like we'll take hockey, for example, a goaltender has massive value, and a goaltender can get really hot, stand on his head, and carry a team very far in the postseason. So when it comes to value of certain players, you can kind of see where it's going with certain sports. In soccer, because there's so many players on a pitch, is there a certain weight that a star player carries if he is not playing in a match?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the striker, the striker position. Not dissimilar to the quarterback in football, where if your quarterback is playing great and he's an MVP type player, and we'll use soccer with Sergio Aguero, who plays for Man City, the leading goal scorer for the last 5 years. If he's out injured, it's a very, very different animal.
Righty, Mars, SiriusXM FC host. All right, one last thing in terms of general questions, and then we'll get to some team-specific stuff. Statistics. I'm a big numbers guy. I like to use numbers, especially for basketball. I'm really big on them and using them in terms of handicapping. You know, obviously people focus on goals for, goals against, shots on goal, a very big one as well. Anything outside of the normal statistics that you think carry a little bit more importance, if we're talking about possessions, corner kicks, things of that nature?
Well, there's one that I always look at, and that is goals scored away from home. Because quite frequently you'll get a team that's, when they're playing at home, they're okay, and then suddenly they go on the road and they get shut out. And you see quite a lot of that. So I think that's a stat well worth looking at.
Do you think, by the way, so on that, because they've been playing in front of nobody. These have been empty arenas that they're playing in front of, and obviously it's been very quiet. It's really weird watching some of these games that are pumping in crowd noise, at least for the feed that you're watching. Have you noticed any differences at all, like with road teams maybe performing better because there isn't that environment that they have to deal with when they're in a foreign territory?
Well, you love your stats, and when the German league, the Bundesliga, first started, I said on Grumpy Pundits on our show, I said, this is going to be a massive advantage for the home teams. There's no crowds there. There's no blah, blah. Well, guess what? It's the opposite of that. And about 25% of the games were won by the home team. So that's going to be a complete turnaround, doesn't it?
Yep, it is. All right, so again, we got four games underway right now in the Premier League. One that I can see at least at this point, Man City up 1-0 in the 12th minute. Over Newcastle as it stands right now. So let's talk about a couple of teams, some angles. First off, I want to get your thoughts. It sounds like Monday is going to be the day. This Man City team, of course, that's in action, waiting for the appeal and what's going to happen with their ban from Champions League. What do you expect to come down on Monday? Because obviously it's very big in terms of what's going to happen with the standings and where teams finish in the Premier League once everything's said and done.
And also, what's going to happen with the players at the club and even the coach? Because if they get the 2-year ban, that will influence a lot of things. I would have a little flutter. I don't know this. This is just me, you know, throwing it out there. I would guarantee that this ban is overturned.
Wow.
I would guarantee that there's no conceivable way that on the appeal that the sport of arbitration will say, okay, the ban stands, and it's a 2-year ban from the Champions League. I think that will be overturned.
Wow. So then that actually, obviously, that changes things, right? Like, for example, we're talking about the Wolves who are playing right now. If the ban is if the ban's upheld, then they have a little bit of a better shot, you know, to finish in fifth and potentially a Champions League spot. So if that's overturned then, right, then we're talking about fifth place being the Europa spot as opposed to maybe potentially finishing and getting in there because of Man City being banned.
Yeah, excellent point. That's a great point. And the team that's fifth, if Man City is the ban upheld, or even upheld for 1 year, which is possible, then that fifth place team not only gets into the Champions League, they get all the money that comes from it as well.
Yeah. Well, give us a breakdown of the Wolves then, because like I told you at the top, like this is the year that I've kind of really been focusing on at least as much as possible, and I can't help but be impressed. Like when you watch them not only play, but the results that they've been turning out, like the fact that they performed very well on the road even before the hiatus, the fact that they're extremely balanced, since the hiatus they've come back, they've been on fire. What makes this Wolves team so good?
A lot of people say that. A lot of people say that Wolves is the team that they're looking at in terms of being a bit of a sleeper for the future as well. Everybody says the coach is fantastic. He brings in a lot of Portuguese players because of that's his history. But they had that terrible result, didn't they?
Yeah.
They had against Arsenal, wasn't it? They had a terrible result. And that brings Manchester United more into play as well.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that. I mean, because Arsenal's been one of those teams that gives up a lot of attempts on goal. Like, to be shut out against Arsenal, I was rather surprised considering how good they had been offensively since the break.
Well, going into the game, I was checking all the odds on that. Yeah. Going into the game, Wolves were actually favorites.
Yeah.
So there you go.
What about Manchester United? You brought them up. Let's talk about them quickly because I found something interesting when I was looking at some odds here. They're 4 points right now behind Leicester City for fourth place. But if you look at some sports books, they are a bigger favorite at minus 250 to finish in the top four than Leicester City, who's actually minus 112. Why do you think that is? I was looking at their schedule. Obviously, Man U's got 5 games left. They got 2 teams stuck in relegation on the schedule as well. And they do meet in the final contest of the year. But to have, according to the odds, a much better shot to surpass Leicester City, who's, 4 points ahead of them, I think that's kind of surprising.
Well, I agree with the odds because the bookmakers, because Manchester United are going through a fantastic spell of form. I think they've only lost one in the last 12,
yeah,
something like that. Whereas Leicester, on the other hand, they're going in the other direction. So I would back Manchester United to finish top four, definitely. Yeah. Well,
what happened with Leicester City? Is it injuries that are slowing them down? Because they really do seem to have been stuck in neutral since the break.
Well, we call it the Jamie Vardy effect.
Yeah.
Jamie Vardy, of course, is their striker. You asked me the question about strikers earlier on. Jamie Vardy went on a spell where he just couldn't score goals. And Leicester went through that period and lost a lot of games. So Vardy's back now on form, of course, and he scored in the game against Arsenal, the 1-1 tie in that game. But I still think that Leicester won't overtake. They won't be higher than Manchester United when it comes to the end of the season. And I think Leicester finish outside of the top four.
Okay, I like it. Let's see, one more. Oh, you know what? Speaking of, you brought up Arsenal. This is what I wanted to touch on with you, too, because maybe this is just an ultimate, like, a nightmare for Leicester City down the stretch, again, with only, 4 games left to go. Arsenal's got the outside shot to finish in fifth place. Do you think that's possible at all? Their defense not good enough in there? Because their schedule's pretty rough down the stretch, too. I think they got one more with Liverpool left and a couple of other quality candidates.
No, I don't think Arsenal do that. I think Arsenal come up short. And the highest I think they've finished is 6. So, another bad year for Arsenal.
Yeah. All right, we'll get you out of here on this. Watford, West Ham, dug out a 4-point lead over Aston Villa, Bournemouth in the relegation race. Aston Villa, Bournemouth, do they make it out of the bottom three, or is this it? Are these the three teams that we're going to get relegated here?
Oh, my goodness. I'm looking at Jack Grealish, the superstar for Aston Villa, that said last week, playing in front of no crowds is like playing a pre-season friendly game. That doesn't bode well for his intensity, does it?
No, it doesn't. What about a team like Watford, too? Because Watford's been pretty – I mean, their form recently has been a little bit better than the teams below them. But what do you make of their schedule? Because they only have – they're sitting on, a 4-point lead outside of Aston Villa in terms of relegation right now.
They had a great win last night as well. Fantastic. Yeah. With a brilliant goal, by the way, from Danny Welbeck. A super bicycle kick to win the game at 2-1. I think Watford are going to be okay.
Rodney Marsh, again, SiriusXM FC host, Grumpy Pundits. Rodney, I appreciate a couple minutes today. What do you got coming up on Grumpy Pundits? Anything interesting? I would assume everything is interesting.
Everything is interesting, especially tomorrow morning, by the way, guys, when Grumpy Pundits is on live at the same time as New York play Philadelphia Union MLS down in Orlando. Oh. So we're going to have a bit of fun with that.
Oh, but hey, actually, really quick, before we get you out of here, if you're still there, Dallas FC out.
Sure.
What'd you make of Dallas FC pulling out? Well, how did that affect the bubble, the tournament there for the MLS?
Well, I don't know if you've seen some of the things today, but Dallas didn't pull out. The league chucked them out, which is, I was checking on that to make sure that was true. And Dallas are not happy, but it was the Major League Soccer that said, hey, you've got these COVID-19 problems, you're out. So it was a league decision, not Dallas's decision.
Hmm. All right, Rodney, thank you very much for the time, man. Appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet.
Rodney Marsh again, former English international football player, footballer in general, and then host over on Grumpy Pundits as it stands right now. So, yeah, Man City, as he said, that'd be really massive if Man City and that appeal is actually met and they decide to strike the ban for Manchester City, because then, of course, as we talked about multiple times, right, the competition for a potential fifth place spot, which would have been maybe a Champions League spot, then just, of course, gets cut down and then be the top four, as it usually is. And teams like the Wolves, as we've talked about, who are sitting just outside for that fifth place spot, maybe have a little bit less to play for, still a chance to, I think, qualify for Europa. But still, it would change the landscape, and I think the way that some of these teams are approaching some of these games a little bit down the stretch. So, yeah, Man City right now up 1-0. We're in the 20th minute as it stands right now, and I'll get the scores on the updates for these other games too, because the one game I did bet was the Wolves plus 115 on the three-way line against Sheffield United. And again, one of three games that are underway. Liverpool, Brighton Hove will be going on later today. Liverpool about $1.90 favorite. All right, we have plenty to get to later in the show today. The Indiana Pacers, I'm actually really excited for this conversation about the Indiana Pacers. We talked a little bit about Victor Oladipo, but it's funny, we had actually the other day when I was here on Monday, we had the Dallas Mavericks, right? And the Dallas Mavericks offensively had some really good numbers, but defensively, they placed really high in key areas of the floor in terms of opponent shooting percentage, and yet their overall efficiency had stood in the range of about 17th. And the Indiana Pacers are actually kind of in that range, but offensively, defensively, they're a very quality team, but offensively, the way that the Pacers play basketball, some of their numbers are actually really solid from a shooting perspective, from everything else, but they leave something to be desired when it comes to their overall efficiency in some of the areas of weakness on the floor that are really going to catch up with them. Like, the Pacers are a perfect example of a team that is really good in a lot of areas, but they struggle in key areas that are going to come back to bite them once the association gets back to playing some real basketball. When we return, though, we'll have a Horses for Courses for this tournament coming up this weekend, and a little bit more. Matt Humans is going to join us at the bottom of the hour as well. Don't go anywhere. It's The Edge here on VSiN.
And we're back with The Edge.
What's up? Welcome in. The debut of UFC's Fight Island, featured in the new issue of Point Spread Weekly, ready for download later today. Lou Finocchiaro offers his opinions on four of the matchups, including the Usman-Masvidal main event. Plus, we cover NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, horse racing, and much more. Sign up now and get all of VSiN's content free until a major sport returns. All you got to do is head up vsin.com/subscribe. That is vsin.com/subscribe. All right, later today, Humans is going to join us. We're going to talk a little bit about what is happening this weekend, the Workday Charity Open, which is going to be fascinating, I think. Golf has been really good. I mean, from the standpoint of if you like low scores, I know a lot of these hardcore golf guys, like Humans, I think for sure, will ask him about it. I know that he is not a fan of low scores and when these guys are just wrecking courses like they have been. But at the same time, you know, some of these courses have set up that way. Once we get to some of these majors, I think we'll start to see some real difficult golf and a lot of these guys feeling a little bit more uncomfortable on the course. However, so let's get to Horses for Courses. So I'm really intrigued by this overall because, and you'll see this right away, right, in terms of a Horses for Courses graphic. And again, what we'll do is, you know, you go over datagolf.org.com, whatever. It's a great site. You can look up course history, true strokes gained, the amount of rounds guys have played on these courses. And what I found really interesting, and you can see it over on the right-hand side, the odds on some of these guys in terms of, you know, some long shots having some really good numbers overall at this course that we're going to see. And so at the top, and again, these are sorted by true strokes gained. So you see the amount of rounds. And this is the cool thing about this weekend, at least of the guys that we had used. There were a couple of guys I cut off because I didn't want to make the list too long, which to me is also a worrisome sign. Like, when you have so many guys who have performed so well on this course, maybe it's going to be a little tough to sort out which of these dudes is actually going to be worth looking at. But let's take a look and sort through some of these. You'll notice the theme, right? Three guys sitting in triple digits. Rory Sabatini, true strokes gained a plus two flat over 34 rounds here, 100-1. Rory let me down last weekend, even though I had a couple of guys contending on Sunday. Regardless, Rory didn't perform too well. Steve Stricker, plus 1.72 over 34 rounds. He's sitting at 300-1. Stewart Cink, plus 166, 54 rounds. He's sitting at 300-1. Guys who just missed the cut in terms of the list that we didn't use. Phil Mickelson, very good numbers here, as did Jim Furyk, who is not on this list, just missed out on the cut as well. But you look at this overall Kuchar, right? To start at the top, 40-1, makes a little sense in terms of the true strokes gained in 40-1. And that was the other thing that I found really interesting about this, which is why I can't wait to talk to humans about it, was, you know, usually we have seen kind of every once in a while, the RBC Heritage, I think, with a one that was a little off. But generally, when we throw up these graphics with the horses for courses, you know, you'll see guys in the same range, right? In the range from like 25 to 60-1. If you remember last week, right, for example, a lot of the guys that we had, now Detroit, of course, didn't have a long sample size, but you went to courses that were correlated, and a lot of the guys that we had used, like a Webb Simpson, like Hideki Matsuyama, those guys, their odds are really short, 12-1, 18-1, in that range. You don't really come up with a lot of guys who are in triple digits like this. And so Rory Sabatini, Steve Stricker, and Stuart Sink all sitting at 100 and 300-1 respectively, right? This is what intrigues me, because you have a lot of guys who are sitting here who have really good course numbers, and yet their odds are still very long. And so to me, that signals, okay, obviously, I say this all the time, right? They know it. If you know it, they know it. What do the odds makers see when you're seeing this? And you see such dominant numbers like we're looking at here, and yet these guys are still sitting in triple digits. So I think one of the guys that I'd be really interested in, and again, he's at 25-1, but had been playing pretty good golf up to a certain point, was Justin Rose. Since a hiatus, had performed very well. The putter had been performing very well. A guy like Ricky Fowler, who's been kind of up and down throughout this entire year, but has started to perform a little bit better, actually ended up finishing within the top 15 this past week at Detroit. So he comes in really good form, has some really good course numbers, sitting at 30-1 over 34 rounds played. I think that's something that's going to be pretty intriguing to look at for this upcoming weekend. But overall, just seeing here and looking at the long odds on some of these guys, I really am curious what I'm missing with a few of these. And so usually when we have these, I'm actually relatively confident, and a little bit more research to flush these out. I'll include most, if not all, of these horse for courses guys. And since golf has returned, we have yet to hit a pre-tournament future, but we have had one or two guys who are within shooting distance competing on Sunday that could potentially win a tournament. I have a guy, right, that finishes one. But that's the thing that interests me, is if we're going to take long shots here at 100-1, 300-1, are they actually going to be performing, or am I missing something or relying a little bit too much on some of these numbers when we finally get to the tournament coming up on Thursday? So humans will have the answer to those questions, and he could pick apart these six guys and see maybe if there's a couple that we don't have on this list or that we just missed that we should probably start to include as we look ahead to what's going to happen coming up this weekend over in Dublin, Ohio. When we come back, nothing but analytics. We're going to have that. We'll talk again about the Indiana Pacers, some of the specific numbers on what's going on with them. Some news, of course, too, about Malcolm Brogdon. If you weren't with us earlier in the program, we'll give you the update on that and much more in the last half hour of The Edge here on VSiN. I don't even know what to do with that. Does Paul know you use that yet? No? God, that's great. That's Paul Howard. Paul Howard of Follow the Money fame, and I would assume fortune. But Paul, thank you very much for the contribution. Here's the thing. This is how much of a team player Paul Howard is. If we don't tell him about it, he'll never know. Anyway, nothing but analytics today. The Indiana Pacers are our team. So let's take a look. Offensive strengths, offensive weaknesses. We do it all the time. You know, this is how we formulate and look at these. And what I find, first off, so Victor Oladipo is not playing. I said this at the top of the show. Since he's been announced that he's not going to play, Philadelphia now a 5-point favorite. Look, the Indiana Pacers played a majority of their season without Victor Oladipo. This isn't to say that Victor Oladipo is worth nothing, but if you're sitting there thinking, all right, let's go out, let's lay these points, Indiana doesn't have a chance. This isn't a team like Washington, for example, right? This isn't a Washington that is losing Bradley Beal. Last year, if Victor Oladipo wasn't going to be playing in this, it's a massive loss. This year, when you spent the majority of the season playing without him, right? And keep in mind, too, it's kind of a newly constructed Indiana Pacers team. This is the first year, this iteration, that they're all playing together with the core of Malcolm Brogdon, Jeremy Lamb, TJ Warren, when Victor Oladipo eventually came back, Holiday, like these guys all kind of playing together. They had a full year, I wouldn't say a full year, a majority of the season playing without Victor Oladipo. So If you're thinking that the Indiana Pacers are straight fade material because Oladipo's not playing, I would say rethink the priorities and dive into some of the numbers without of them. Regardless, let's take a look at the Indiana Pacers as a whole in terms of their offense. They have a lot of good stuff. And by the way, here's their, you know, odds to win the final 100-1, odds to win the Eastern Conference 40-1, ATS record as well. But let's take a look at this, right? Because you see a lot of good ratings on the offensive side of the ball. Now, keep in mind, I'll tell you this right now. Usually, I won't include the specifics for, like, mid-range, for example, right? So, like, we're talking about, like, long mid-range, short mid-range. I threw that up here for Indiana because I wanted to show how good of a mid-range team the Indiana Pacers are, right? So let's just start with this overall. It's really clear the way they play offense, right? In terms of shooting from the mid-range, they're third. They shoot 43.8%. They're eighth in long mid-range shooting. There we go. I got through it. Short mid-range shooting, they're first in the NBA. But they're a team that likes to run their offense through the mid-range. Take this for example. Indiana takes 34.2% of their attempts from mid-range in general. That is the fourth most in the NBA. 15.9% of their attempts as a team come from long mid-range, which is the second most in the NBA. And they have all of these fantastic shooting numbers in that area of the floor. So it's pretty clear that they thrive in that area of the floor. Look at some of their players, right? TJ Warren. He loves that spot of the floor. 47% of TJ Warren's attempts come from the mid-range. He shoots 47%. Domantas Sabonis, fewer attempts from mid-range, 34%, but shoots a rock-solid 43.6%. Malcolm Brogdon, he takes 34% of his attempts from mid-range, second on the team in shooting between the arc and 4 feet at 47.6%. So you have a lot of guys who really thrive in that area. And off of the bench, a guy like TJ McConnell. TJ McConnell lives in the mid-range, leads the team in terms of percentage of attempts from that area of the floor, 59%, and shoots 47.3% from that area of the floor. Victor Oladipo and Jeremy Lamb, who aren't going to be, of course, in Orlando due to various injuries, they really actually like the mid-range as well, but of course, neither are going to be playing in the bubble. But the other thing that sticks out about these numbers for the Indiana Pacers, besides the mid-range numbers, if we could throw this up one more time, is the three-point shooting numbers. Like, look at this. Corner three-point shooting, 40.4%, ninth best in the NBA. Non-corner three-point shooting, 36.4%. That's 10th best in the NBA. Overall, they're the sixth best shooting team in the National Basketball Association, 37.5%. So you're thinking, okay, they take a lot of mid-range shots, but their three-point shooting's great. And in today's NBA, that should be a strength. And percentage-wise, it is. But here's the thing with Indiana. The three-point percentages in terms of shooting are great. In terms of frequency, though, it's a different story. Indiana actually ranks 30th in terms of corner three-point attempts taken in terms of frequency. They rank 29th in terms of percentage of shots taken from three-point range. So they're extremely efficient when they take those shots, but they don't take them very often. So it is a strength, but they're not a team that sits back and chucks it, right? Like a Dallas Mavericks, who we had at the beginning of the week. Like a Houston Rockets, who we talked about a few weeks back, right? Indiana's a team will shoot a lot more mid-range shots, and they're efficient when they take three-point shots, but they don't take a lot of them, right? And so, like, look, for example, the roster makeup. Justin Holiday, Doug McDermott, they're sharp shooters, if you will. They take a majority of their attempts from deep, 65% and 53% respectively, while hitting at a high clip, 44% and 46% respectively. Miles Turner is actually third on the team in terms of three-point frequency. He takes 40% of his attempts from deep, but he shot the lowest percentage of his career since his rookie season. That's 34% just this past regular season. So you would assume that maybe there's some regression. He gets to about 35%. But I will say that if you're a player who takes 40% of your shots from three-point range, you should hit higher than about 34%. So anyway, this leads me to the issues for Indiana's offense, right? Because the three-point percentage is high, but they don't take a lot. And the mid-range percentage is high, both in frequency and accuracy, right? And we've talked about this multiple times. If you're a team that thrives in the mid-range, to me, at least when I'm handicapping, from a big-picture perspective, I don't think that's an offensive game plan that will really thrive. One of their offensive weaknesses, for example, if you can throw that one up one more time, rim shooting. They're 62.2% as a team that's 21st in the NBA. Now, if your initial thought is, well, if they're a team that takes a lot of jump shots, the rim shooting is going to suffer, right? They rank 10th in terms of frequency of attempts at the rim. So they're actually a top 10 team in terms of trying to get to within 4 feet of the basket, but they can't finish, which is a worrisome sign in and of itself. Fast break efficiency kind of comes with it, right? They're a slower paced team, 120.4 points per 100 possessions. The free throw rate, it kind of pairs with the struggles at the rim, right? 17.1 free throws made per 100 possessions, extremely low, 29th in the NBA. And then that last number right there, which paints the picture both offensively and defensively with what's wrong with the Indiana Pacers. I shouldn't say what's wrong. What you don't really like about the Indiana Pacers in a big picture perspective. Offensive rebounding rate for opponents, 23.3%. 27th in the NBA, or excuse me, not for opponents, for them, 23.3% in the NBA. And that leads to the issues with the Indiana Pacers. For a team that thrives in the mid-range, they have a couple of guys in terms of their bigs, right, like a Miles Turner, who play a little bit more perimeter-esque brand of basketball. They're not a good rebounding team. Overall, if you look at some of the rebounding numbers for them, right, think about Domantas Sabonis, Miles Turner, Jakar Sampson, who doesn't really play that many minutes. That's their main rotation down low. Sabonis is their best rebounder. He actually takes 61% of his attempts to the rim, so he's actually a guy that thrives within 4 feet, and he leads the team in individual defensive rebounding rate and offensive rebounding rate. But Miles Turner, for example, one of their bigs, should be one of their rim protectors. He operates away from the basket, and his rebounding numbers are pretty poor. He ranks in the 24th and 54th percentile at his position in offensive and defensive rebounding rates. Not very good, right? It's why they rank 15th in opponent second chance points. They can't get opponents off the board. So defensively, they have a lot of strengths, which, you know, we have like about 20 seconds left we could show you really quickly. They have a lot of strengths. Defensively, they're very good, the Indiana Pacers. But the key weakness, right, of not being able to finish at the rim, despite the fact that you take 10th most percentage of your attempts within 4 feet, and the fact that they can't keep opponents off the board, both offensively and defensively, it's going to lead you to a lot of struggles, I think, once you get to Orlando, once you get to some of these teams that can really wreck you on the boards, a la like a Philadelphia 76ers, that kind of type. Milwaukee Bucks, for example, as well, that can rebound pretty well, too. So the rebounding, just watch that when you're watching this Indiana Pacers team once we get to Orlando. It's really going to hold them back at this point. When we come back, Matt Humans is going to join us. We have plenty to get to in the world of golf with Humans a little bit more as we wrap up the Edge here on VSiN. Hey, it's Wednesday. That means Point Spread Weekly's live. Debut of UFC's Fight Island is featured in the new issue of PSW, ready for download. Lou Finocchiaro offers his opinions on the four of the matchups, including the Usman-Masvidal main event. Plus, of course, we cover NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, horse racing, and much more. Sign up now and get all of VSiN's content free until the major sport returns. Just go to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up. All right, last few minutes here on The Edge on VSiN, the sports betting network. Matt Humans, who used to be my partner in crime late nights, but moved on to greener pastures and follow the money. Nice enough to give us a couple of minutes, even though he is a massive star. Humans, are you well rested? I haven't talked to you for a while. How's vacation?
You know, it was pretty good, JVT. It was like more than three straight months of doing shows, putting out magazines without taking really any time off during this pandemic, just trying to be creative and come up with ideas and keep things rolling. And then I finally took some time off last week, went to Texas. It was a good time. I hit the golf course twice in South Texas, which I'm going to guess is more times than you have hit the golf course since March 15th.
Does the driving range count?
Yeah, let's go ahead and count that. Have you been to the range twice?
Yes, I've been to the range twice.
Huh? And that's it? You have not been on a course?
No, I have not been on a course. Not since the nightmare that was you and I on the par three over at the Vegas Golf Center.
Okay. One of these days, hopefully you're going to take this sport seriously. And I know you are starting to take it seriously as a better, so we can talk about that now.
That's right. All right, yeah, let's talk about this. So first off, and I know you guys have talked about this a lot, but for maybe people who aren't familiar with what's going to happen over the next 2 weeks, we're having back-to-back tournaments right at Muirfield.
Yeah, it's unique. You never see this where the PGA Tour has a tournament on the same course back-to-back weeks, but there's a lot of things in 2020 we've never seen before. Yeah. So I think it's going to be it's going to be figuring your handicapping a lot more next week than it is this week, right? Because I think the course setup is going to be much easier this week. And then for Jack's event next week, they're going to make it a little bit tougher. Still, the players you want to target this week are guys who are strong iron players. And we're not even going to talk about Bryson DeChambeau and the Incredible Hulk and his strokes gained tee green and how he's shrinking golf courses, because really the big hitter is not going to matter this week. You kind of take that out of the equation, and DeChambeau's not going to be in the field anyway. So I think you got a lot of quality iron players you're going to be looking at. You know, you got to be good with the putter and good with the short irons, and those are going to be the guys you want to bet this week.
So I wanted to ask you, because we usually every single week for these golf tournaments, we'll go through the course history, right? We'll look at true strokes gained on the course, and we like to use sample size. So like guys who have a really good true strokes gained on top of a very big sample size of courses, usually we'll focus on those guys, and those will be a majority of some of the futures bets that I'll use. And what stuck out to me for this week, humans, is the fact that a lot of the guys who have a lot of rounds played at this course on top of having a really good true strokes gained are really big long shots this week. So like I'm bringing like Rory Sabatini, for example, true strokes gained here over 34 rounds is a plus two. Let's see. Steve Stricker, plus 1.72 over 34 rounds in his career. He's 300-1. Stuart Sink, plus 166 over 54 rounds is 300-1. So my question is like, am I missing something? Because I figured that if they have such good numbers on a course like this, their odds would be a little bit shorter than triple digits.
Well, Sabatini's not in very good form.
Right.
So that's a guy I've never really been interested in playing him anyway. Brady Cannon, I know, likes him, plays him in matchups, but I never look at a guy like that as a potential winner. Maybe that probably means a win this week since I just said that. But now Steve Stricker is old and probably can't sustain it through four rounds. Some of those guys you're talking about, I don't consider, you know, futures board bets. So they might be guys you want to play in matchups. Or, okay, hey, you know, you can bet one if you really like one of those guys. You think they're in good form and they have course form, you know, bet to finish in the top 20. Something like that. You don't have to bet these guys to win. And some, you know, some places also offer top 30s and top 40s where you can play those as well. This is going to be very competitive again this week. You know, last week it was insane how many players were within, you know, five strokes of the lead at one point on Sunday. It was, what, like 40 guys or something. So I think it's going to be very similar this week. Wes Reynolds said he thinks the winner is going to be about 18 under par.
Jeez.
And, I'm looking at guys who are playing well right now and who have played well on this course in the past. And Ricky Fowler is quietly under the radar of the KBT.
He came up in our research,
not a majors.
Too.
Yeah. You know, it's not a major, so he's not going to crack under the pressure if he has a lead on the weekend or whatever causes Ricky Fowler to fail in majors. And actually, he probably hasn't been as bad as perception because he did finish second in the Masters a couple years ago and played really well. But he's got a good track record on this course. He's really played pretty well the last two or three weeks on tour. And Sercha bumped his odds up as high as 44-1.
Wow.
This morning. So I think that's the type of player I'm looking for value in, is a Ricky Fowler type of guy who plays well here, has been playing well lately. He's a little bit under the radar because he hasn't been in contention to win, but he, you know, he's, what was he about? I think he was about six strokes off the lead at one point last week. So it's not like he was playing that poorly. Actually, he's playing pretty well.
Yep.
You know, Xander Schauffele is a guy I still think can play well on any course. You can find him in the mid 20s. And Brooks Koepka, Wes Reynolds and I are on the same page with Koepka. I really thought 2 weeks ago, before he set out that tournament when his caddy tested positive, I thought, wow, Koepka's starting to play some great golf. And he made some comments after a tournament about his knee. You know, he was coming off knee surgery. He said, man, my knee's never felt better. I feel great right now. He was surprisingly upbeat. And I thought that Koepka was basically trying to tell you that he's ready to play some great golf. And then his caddy tests positive. So he sits out a tournament. He was 25-1. I had him. That was a refund because he never teed off. But I'll play him again this week, and I'll play him again this week at 19-1 because, you know, the PGA is a few weeks away. Koepka obviously likes to peak in the majors, but I think he looks like the type of guy who's ready to win right now, and you're not going to get, 18, 19-1, something like that range from Brooks Koepka too often. So those are a couple of other players I really like this week.
Let me get your thoughts on two more golfers that came up, and these are much shorter than the triple-digit guys that I was throwing at you. Justin Rose, who right before Travelers had been performing really well. He's got some good course numbers here over 46 rounds, 25-1 over at Westgate. Not sure what the circuit number was. And then Matt Kuchar popped up as well with some awesome numbers on this course, sitting at 40-1, but his recent form has not been great at all.
No, his form's not been good. Kuchar's been a big disappointment since the PGA Tour returned. I bet him 1 week. I almost never bet the guy. But I bet him 1 week he was a flop, and I said, okay, I'm done with him, because Kuchar is one of those guys just doesn't win that often, kind of like Justin Rose. I probably bet Justin Rose 15 times. I'm 0 for 15 with that guy, including taking probably the most agonizing defeat of my golf betting life was when he blew the Masters down the stretch and just handed it to Sergio Garcia.
Yep.
One of the most pathetic performances I've ever seen. That's going to take me a long time to get over that. Every time I see Justin Rose, it makes me sick to think about that. But Rose, I can see why Wes Reynolds is on him this week. I mean, there are a lot of positive things, a lot of signs that are positive pointing to Justin Rose this week. But like I said, he's right there in contention a lot of times. He has trouble closing the deal. He doesn't have a lot of big time wins on his resume. But yeah, I think that's a player you have to look at this week. And a couple of the young guns, we had Indy Jeff Seeley on the show this morning, and he brought up two players, one who I bet last week, and that's Jeff's best bet this week is Victor Hovland.
Yep.
And you can find Hovland at about, I would say, mid-20s, 25-1 or better. And Joaquin Niemann, who's a player I started to bet, he's good with his irons. He's a player I started to bet JVP when the season started, and then I just backed off of him, kind of lost interest. But he's a guy who's going to win, and he's got good course history here. A 27th and a 6th place finish, and he's at 50-1. So I think Joaquin Niemann's maybe another long shot type of player you take a look at.
I like it. Yeah, Hovland was great. I had him in a matchup with Sung Jae Im last week. He was fantastic last weekend, Victor Hovland. Hey, we got two minutes left. Are you interested at all in anything 251 coming up this weekend?
I think UFC 251 is going to be great. We talked about it with Paul Howard this morning, and I think it could be the biggest bet UFC card ever. Obviously, all the attention of the sports world is basically on this event on Saturday night. I think it's fascinating. Now, man, I like Jorge Masvidal quite a bit.
Yep.
I wonder, JVT, is the weight cut he's got to pull off too much this week? He's got a cut from last week somewhere around 15 pounds, I read in one story. He is, kind of on a free roll. He's got to build an excuse if he loses. He can just let it fly here, and I think he's going to try to knock out Usman early in this fight because he doesn't want to get into a wrestling match and he doesn't want it to go a long way. I think a lot of times when people handicap something like this, they overlook the fact that Usman's been preparing the whole time to take Gilbert Burns. You know, now he's got to take on a totally different opponent at the last minute, so it's a difficult switch for him as well. So I think this line's a little bit too high at minus 300, but the one thing that concerns me is the weight cut that Masvidal's got to pull off here. I'm interested in the dog. I'm interested in several spots on this card. I actually have not made a bet yet. I will by Friday and Saturday, no question about it, but give me your quick thought on the main event.
Yeah, I'm with you. Masvidal, 100%. We talked with Big Adam Hill on Monday. He actually said it was 20 pounds that he had to cut, but to your point, humans, okay, about getting prepped for a certain guy, this was the fight that they originally wanted. Masvidal was kind of getting ready for Usman already. He's not the one who had to switch preparation in terms of game plan. Usman's the one. So I feel like, to your point, to your theory there, I think Masvidal, from a preparation standpoint, has a slight edge because he was always getting ready for Usman. Usman had to switch opponents twice now. Right. So I do think he's got a little advantage there. And I would also point out, we've talked about this with Adam on Monday too, 20 pounds, 15 pounds seems like a lot for us. But over a week, these guys are used to cutting weight like that, so it might not be that big of a deal for him, you know, in the days leading up.
Yeah, he's got a much better shot to cut 15 pounds than I would over a week. There's no doubt about it. But that's the one thing, you know, that does concern me a little bit, that he's got to cut that much weight. But I'll probably be on the underdog in that main event for you know, the reason he just talked about
it. All right, humans. Hey, we're up against it. Thanks a lot, man. We'll talk next week.
You bet. Thanks, man.
It's the Edge. VSiN.com/podcast for anything you miss. We'll see you.